SBS Radio.
So as an organisation, we believe it's critically important to ensure that we service the not-for-profit sector with their banking services and their financial services, but we should also support how the sector can strengthen its capability in providing a more inclusive and equitable Australia. So we thought it would be a very good idea to help develop the opportunity for future leaders within the not-for-profit sector and to help them broaden their skill set and capability by exploring some really what we think are critical topics around inclusion and equality.
And there are two fellowships offered, the applications are coming up very soon, and one of these scholarships is specifically for Indigenous applicants.
Correct. So if I briefly talk about both of them and then maybe explore a little bit more with regard to the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander opportunities that we're talking about.
Yeah.
We're looking at really developing the leadership skills and the people and the cultural programs that we can ensure that as the not-for-profit sector is more capable and has more capability and capacity to service the future needs of an inclusive society. But in particular, I think when you look at closing the gap, when you look at current activities which are being undertaken in society, there's a critical component for us across Australia to better understand how we can have more positive interactions and more positive outcomes between Indigenous peoples and the community and the not-for-profit sector. So it's, if you like, it's that interconnecting circles between those three elements which we think are exceptionally important, and also to have a bit of the opportunity to look at it with a bit of a different lens. What can we learn from overseas? Are there best practices or developing models or learnings from overseas that fellows or potential fellows from the Churchill Fellowship would be able to explore and able to test and challenge and bring that back so that we can add to the debate and also add to hopefully change behaviour and inclusion.
Yeah, I have to remind our listeners that the recipients of these awards will have the opportunity to travel overseas, see the best practice, what's done overseas, and bring back this experience to Australia. Now, you said they're from the non-for-profit sector, no obligation to work for the banking sector, they'll go straight back into the non-for-profit on their return. What's in this program after they return to Australia?
So we believe that as an organisation, we're half owned by a company called Community 21. And Community 21 is made up of 38 not-for-profits in various sectors across Australia. And as an organisation, we believe that you can be a good company and do good at the same time. So when we look at actually where we believe why banks were created in the first place, it was actually to create wealth. Not wealth for a single stakeholder, but for the broader community and the broader village. So we believe that we have a role in not only ensuring that we're commercially operated, but we're also community oriented. And we specialise in providing services to the not-for-profit sector because they play a critical role in ensuring that we have the safety nets and the inclusion activities so that we have an Australia that supports those who are at need or potentially coming towards being in the position where they need solutions and they also need support so that they can feel inclusive and feel valued. We think it's critically important to change the debate.
Yeah.
How do we actually improve people's capability? How do we improve the capacity? What's the value which is on connection? Where's the best practices about having an inclusive society? Where can we actually bring those learnings into the debate and into the discussion?
Yeah.
Now, we're doing this so that we can actually have people explore new thinking and new opportunities, new ecosystems and new models. What we want to do is to make sure that the people have the necessary platforms to be able to promote their learnings, whether that is in community events which are organised by the Churchill Foundation, whether it is events organised by universities, whether it's by Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander community, whether it's by community sector banking. The more broader that we can actually distribute the learnings, I think the more closer we are to be able to develop new partnerships and collaborations to address inequality, exclusion and the issues which are presenting themselves to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders. There's no need to work for our organisation. This is about how do we learn as a society and how can we apply those learnings to improve not only the communities in which we operate and engage, but broader Australia.
Broader Australia. Now, when they go overseas, which countries will they be going to?
That's the most beautiful thing. I don't know. It's for the actual applicants to put forward their application on the 1st Feb of next year and put in their application with where they believe they could get most value out of a fellowship, whether that is into the Americas or whether it's in Asia Pacific or whether it's in Europe or whether it's in Africa. It's really to be determined by the person applying for the application.
Yeah, that's excellent. And one thing I would like to add, you just mentioned Africa, and one thing I realized, some of the best practices that I discovered there coming from a third world country can benefit actually the first world countries as well. And one example I can give is Mauritius. And what I learned from there is that there's a kind of a levy or a special tax that's taken from the big corporations that goes to financing non-for-profit sector, which means the non-for-profit sector is not solely dependent on donations from individuals. Well, they do contribute, but they are not just tied to little donations or little fundings on a yearly basis and dependent on changing government moods. One day you've got this branch of politics in power, they support these kind of activities, and then when the other branch of politics comes into power the following after the elections, the fundings tend to dry out and things like that. So there's something to learn from an African country that I saw there.
I totally agree. I had the opportunity in February of this year to go to West Africa, to Senegal, to a conference in Dakar. And that conference was the International Network of Investors in the Social Economy. And I had the opportunity to talk to a professor from the local university, and he lived in a village of about 100 people, and we were having a discussion about the difference between investing in growth and investing in the development of people. And I suppose that's one of the reasons why we're so passionate at community sector banking about not only the Churchill fellowships and scholarships but also our Indigenous scholarship program. He put an argument to me saying that if you invest in people, if you empower people, if you give them the access to knowledge, access to capability, then they will be in the best position to be able to grow the village. So instead of just investing or providing donations that provide growth opportunities for the village in a physical sense, invest in people and they will be able to, through that capability, capacity, confidence, connections, be in a far better place to be able to have self-determination over where that village goes. And he was citing to me learnings from the United Nations Sustainability Development Goals and how critical they were to ensure that we measure a pathway of creating new ecosystems and learnings. And I totally agree with you. It doesn't matter where you have the learning from, whether it is from something where we label it first world or label it third world. It doesn't matter where you actually get the learning from. If it's the right learning and it can change our thinking, our parameters, it can change ecosystems, it can get new partners. What we're doing is we're trying to have a more inclusive communities, more inclusive villages, more tolerance, more compassion. And I think that there are many learnings out there where sometimes we have conscious or unconscious biases which may block us to that thinking. by supporting some people either through looking at leadership opportunities and what are the leaders of the future necessary to support a growing and demanding not-for-profit sector in Australia, or supporting Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander thinkers and leaders to look at what are different ecosystems and connections and outcomes that could be achieved if we have those three areas of working together, the communities and not-for-profit sector and the our Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander leaders and thought provokers. I think this is where let people have the freedom to explore, to think, to imagine, and let's learn from those experiences, which is a long way of saying, to answer your question, I don't know where they'll travel, but they'll travel and they'll learn and they'll bring something back.
Yeah, you mentioned a word that's very important for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities. It's self-determination. It's a word that comes up in the debates very, very often.
To me, what I think, self-determination has the ability to empower, change behaviours, create new ecosystems and models, new partnerships, new levels of trust. I think it can do many things. And I think that self-determination, if we look at the not-for-profit sector, it's a huge sector. It's $140-odd billion and employs nearly 10% of all Australians. And people are looking at it as, you know, on one side of the brain looks at it as a sector and as an industry. And on the other side of the brain, it's a requirement of an inclusive country to ensure that we have a strong, able not-for-profit sector to ensure that we provide the safety net for those who are experiencing exclusion or marginalisation. That's a critical element where we need to change the debate in Australia that welfare is not a cost. It's actually an investment in an inclusive country. If we look also from the Indigenous peoples working with broader communities and the not-for-profit sector, and potentially, as you mentioned in your learnings, I think we can explore some new things about a more capable and self-determining sector.
You will sound a little bit heretic there when you said welfare is not a, well, I don't know, I can't repeat how you expressed it, but it goes counter to the main narrative where we say we have lifters and leaners and things like that. Well, they are not just lifters and leaners. This is a community. Everything cannot be commodified. They're definitely a sector that's not there for sale. It's a sector that's...
Someone used an example to me which just resonated, and they go, no child chooses to be homeless, but we consider providing safe housing and a security of a home as a welfare cost. But if we actually have an environment for children where they can learn, they can be safe, they can imagine, they can blossom, then intergenerational benefit is tremendous. So that's why I think we should start considering that people don't choose to be excluded or don't choose to have the ability to contribute or to belong or to be valued. So I think we do need to change the debate around, and potentially the key thing there, Bertrand, is the measures. We measure everything from a financial point of view, but maybe we should start to measure our investment in an inclusive society from the levels of connection, the levels of confidence, the level of human capital which we can generate, the level of societal outcomes and not just the financial indicators.
Enjoy more stories in your language by visiting sbs.com.au.